Okay, good morning, everyone. Great tzchus to be able to be with you here again today and to continue in our learning. I want to try to do something a little bit different today. Of course, still stick to Sefer Tehillim as that is the topic of our learning. But being that we are only now just a couple of days away, a week away from Shavuos, to be able to maybe tie in some elements of Megillas Rus to Tehillim, both for this week and the Mirtz Hashem for next week. So we actually skip forward a little bit in Sefer Tehillim. In number one, we find ourselves in Kapitel Pei Tes, chapter 89. And the Pasuk says, Matzasi David Avdi B'Shemen Kodshi Mishachtiv. I found my servant David, and I anointed him with my holy oil. So an interesting idea. So the question is, all right, so obviously the Kapitel highlighting the fact that David was chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, it's interesting, on a most basic level, why would David go ahead and need to write a sentence like this? So remember, again, David's reputation in the beginning of his monarchy was that he had stolen, the way that Shaul portrayed it was that he had stolen the crown from Shaul, that he had led a rebellion against the crown, and as a result was actively trying to usurp power. David HaMelech over here, highlighting in this idea, Matzasi David Avdi, David says, I didn't find the monarchy found me. Not only that, but remember, David HaMelech actually tries to actively run away from the monarchy. He actually does not want the position. He does not want the glory that comes because there's so much more heartache and so much more difficulty and so much more sadness. So David HaMelech saying over here, please understand, at no point in time in my life did I ever grab the power for myself. At no point in time did I ever anoint myself. But rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu found me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu anointed me. The interest of the Mefarshim go in many different directions and explain what does it mean. We know when you find someone, so usually, again, what's important to know is, so where did you find them? Where did you find them, right? I lost my keys. I found my keys. Knowing where I found them is very important. Why? Because the next time that I forget my keys, I'm going to know exactly where to look. So when the Pasuk says, I found David, where did HaKadosh Baruch Hu find David? So if you look at the Mitzvah, that's David number two. Matzasi. Oso Matzasi Bibnei Yishai. Ultimately, again, remember, David HaMelech says, where was David HaMelech found? He was found amongst the sons of Yishai. Remember, again, we know the story. Shmuel HaNavi comes to Yishai. He says to Yishai, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chosen one of your sons as king. But remember, God did not convey to Shmuel which son was picked as king. So they go through all of the sons, and as much as David's brothers were valiant warriors, right, already battle-tested individuals, leaders in their own right, they were not chosen. But in fact, it was young, inexperienced shepherd David who was chosen ultimately to be the king. So I Matzasi, where did you find David? Amongst the sons of Yishai. The Eben Ezra writes, he says, Matzasi, Hatam Shlo Nimtza Bedoro Kamohu. So the Eben Ezra Matzasi means, I found David amongst a generation of people. Throughout the entire generation, throughout the entire populace, there was no one else like David HaMelech. There was no one else, ultimately, again, who was like him, deserving of leading Klal Yisrael. The Medrash says, and this is where we're going to focus on, Rabbi Yitzchak, Matzasi David Avdi, where did I find David HaMelech? Heichan Matzasi Oso Bisdom. An incredible Medrash. Where did I find David HaMelech? Kadosh Baruch Hu, you want to know where I found David? I found David in Sdom. In Sdom. An incredibly riveting Medrash. What does this mean? Sdom, remember again, was the epicenter, the pit, right, of depravity. Sdom was one of the most immoral cities. Sdom was destroyed. So yet, the Medrash says, Matzasi David Avdi, where did I find David? I found David in Sdom. So what does this mean? So on the most basic level, what it means is as follows. David HaMelech, remember again, hails from Sdom. You'll say, how could that be? Because remember again, David HaMelech on his grandmother's side, great-grandmother's side. So ultimately again, Rus, his great-grandmother, was a descendant of the nation of Moab. Moab, Ammon and Moab are the two nations that come out from Lot and his daughters. Remember again, when Sdom is destroyed, Lot and his two daughters, his wife went as well, but she turned into a pillar of salt on the way. Lot and his two daughters end up hiding out in a cave to escape destruction. The daughters think that the world has come to an end. And as such, they come up with a plan to get their father drunk. They become pregnant by their father, and they both give birth to boys, right? One being Moab, and one being Ammon. So Moab is the nation from where Rus descended. And ultimately, again, Rus is a great-grandmother of David HaMelech. Great-great-grandmother of David HaMelech. So therefore, the Medrash says, where did I find David? Matsasi David Avdi. And where did I find David? Matsasi Oso Bistom. I found him in the city of stone. That David HaMelech, the great David HaMelech, the great father of the messianic line, of dynastic monarchy, what are his origins? His origins are stone. Now, the truth is, this Medrash is gripping on a variety of different levels. But on the most basic level, what it also tells us is that if you want to understand David, you have to understand Rus. If you want to understand David, you have to understand Sodom. The truth is, it's no different than any other person. If you want to understand why a person is the way he or she is, so you have to sometimes look at their parents, right? Remember again, so when it comes to when we grow up, have a bye one day, we'll all grow up in Mirat Hashem. When we grow up and we try to forge our identity, so people usually forge their identity in two different ways. There are things that I learned from my parents that I want to reinforce. I want to keep that. And there are things that I learned from my parents that I never want to replicate in my own home. I don't want that to be part of my life. Maybe that worked for them, but it does not work for me. It does not work for me. So David HaMelech is no different. To understand David, you have to understand where he comes from. And where does David come from? Amazingly enough, David HaMelech comes from Sodom. He comes from Sodom. He comes from Moab. He comes from Lot and his daughters. That is where David HaMelech hails from. So if you want to understand who David HaMelech is, if you want an insight into the Davidic personality, then we have to understand Rus. Then we have to understand the Alter Baba, right? We have to understand who the great-grandmother is. Because if we understand his family, if we understand his yichus, then again, we can ultimately understand who it is that David HaMelech truly was. And this is an incredible, incredible idea, that to understand who a person really is, you have to look at where they come from. So what we're going to try to do today is spend a little bit of time focusing on Rus, the individual Rus, the courage of Rus. And again, hopefully by the end of the shir, we will see how some of the personality traits and some of the koach that was present in Rus trickles down to her great-grandson, David HaMelech. So I want to draw your attention, excuse me, to what is perhaps the strangest episode in the entire Megillah. You know, there are a couple of stories that we find throughout Tanakh that the truth is, like, they defy comprehension a little bit. It's hard for us to wrap our head around what exactly happened over here. So take a look at number 5. So I'm quoting to you over here from the 3rd chapter of Megillas Rus. So remember again, Rus has come back with Naomi to Eretz Canaan. The famine is over, but again, remember when they had left Canaan to go to Moab. So Elimelech, Naomi's husband dies, Mahlon and Kilion, Naomi's sons die, and Mahlon and Kilion had married Moabite girls. Whether they converted, didn't convert, is a whole discussion. The two Moabite girls were Rus and Arpa. Naomi decides to come back to Eretz Yisrael. Rus comes with her, Arpa stays back behind in Moab. So Naomi is destitute. She comes back to Eretz Yisrael. She has absolutely no money, nothing to her name. So remember again, she tells Rus to go out and glean in the field. To make a very long story short, Rus runs into Boaz. They realize that they are related, right? They're familiarly related. And Boaz tells Rus, listen, you don't have to go to any other fields. Come collect by me. So Naomi sees that Boaz has taken an interest. Now again, there's no indication that there's any kind of interest for marriage or anything like that, but he's taking an interest in her in that she's a family member and she's a destitute family member, and he, Baruch Hashem, is a wealthy leader of Klal Yisrael. So you see a member of your family struggling, he says to her, listen, you don't have to go to other fields, just come to me, you'll collect what you need from me, and that is it. So now number 5 picks up with that. So now this is the discussion between Naomi and Rus. Vatomer lo Naomi chamosa, biti, halo avakesh lecha manoach asher yitav lach. So Naomi, it's actually such a beautiful and moving passage. Naomi says to Rus, you know, you're a young woman, and I want you to find happiness. You should not be living out your life with me. I'm a widow. I have no husband. I have no children. Everything's been taken from me. No power, no wealth, no influence, no standing, nothing. I'm nothing. So you should not live out your life with me. I want you to have something better. I want you to have something more beautiful. So here's what I'm going to tell you to do. Va'ata halaboaz modatanu asha'isa es narosav. Hine hu zores goras orim halali. You know Boaz, our family member, whose field you go to glean all of the time. So he winnows, he's winnowing, right? He's threshing, he's preparing the grain in his storehouse at night. So Ros, here's what I want you to do. V'rachatzt, v'sacht, v'samt simlo sayich, alayich, v'yararit hagoren, al tiv adi li'ish ad koloso le'achov alishtos. Do me a favor, get dressed up beautifully, put on your nicest dress, wash yourself, anoint yourself, and go into the granary. But sneak into the granary. Don't let anyone see you coming in. So what happens? V'ahi b'shachvo, when Boaz goes to sleep in the granary, v'yadat esamakom asher yishkav sham, take note of the place where he fell asleep. U'basa v'gilisa magalosav, go, lay down by his feet, take off his shoes, uncover his feet. V'shachavt v'hu yagid lach es asher ta'asin. And he will tell you what you should do. So first of all, this is wild. This is absolutely wild. Remember again, if someone told you this plan, you would think this is the most immoral thing I've ever heard. What are you talking about? A woman is going to go ahead and hide in a man's granary, wait till he falls asleep, then lay down at his feet, take off his shoes, and he'll tell you what to do. What's going on over here? Now, Naomi's instructions sound a little bit outrageous, but what's amazing even more is what happens. Vatomre la kala sher tomri elai esa. Ruth says to Naomi, whatever you tell me to do, I'll do. Ruth says, okay. Vatere tagorn vataske kala sher tzivisa chamosa. So Ruth sneaks into the granary, hides, right? She puts on her nicest dress, she anoints herself, she washes herself, she goes into the granary, she hides. Vayochal boaz vayisht vayitav libo vayovo lishkov b'kzeh ha'arema. Vatavo balat vategal margalosa vatishkov. So Boaz eats, he drinks, he's in a good mood, and what happens? He went to lay down at the edge of the stack of wheat. He falls asleep, Rus comes out, sneaks out, lays down by his feet, and uncovers his shoes. Vayhi bechatzi alayla vayecharat ha'ish. Vayilafes. V'hine isha shocheves margalosav. Boaz wakes up with a start. What's happening over here? He wakes up and there's a woman who's sleeping by his feet. Vayomer, mi'at. He says, who are you? It's dark. He doesn't even know who this is. Who are you? Vatomer, anochi rus amasecha. Ufarasta kinafecha alamascha. Kigo el ato. I am Rus, your maidservant, and I am asking that you spread out your cloak on your maidservant, for you are the Redeemer. So interestingly enough, if you notice again, Naomi never tells Rus to say this, right? Naomi just tells Rus what she has to do. Bathe, perfume yourself, put on your nicest dress, go to the granary, hide yourself, come out, lay down by his feet, uncover his shoes, he'll tell you what to do. What's amazing is that that's not what Rus does. I mean, Rus follows all of the steps, but then amazingly enough, when Boaz says, who are you? She says, I am Rus, and I'm here for you to redeem me, whatever that redemption means. But you are my closest surviving relative, and therefore ultimately I'm asking that you spread your cloak over me to redeem me. So the question we have to explore is Naomi obviously had a plan. She obviously had a plan, right? And the plan, of course, was a moral plan. And Rus, in her willingness to comply, also understood the morality and profundity of the plan. But for us as the reader, when you see this, this is wild. I mean, this is absolutely wild. Can you imagine if someone suggested to a person to do this? We'd say, again, that's so immoral. What are you advocating? How is this going to end? So we have to try to understand, what is it exactly that Naomi was trying to accomplish? Naomi was a righteous woman. Naomi was a smart woman. She orchestrated many of these events behind the scenes. So obviously she had a plan. What was it? So I'm going to share with you a couple of interesting approaches. If you take a look at number 6. So here we're focusing more on the ideas. What was the symbolism when Naomi tells Rus, go lay down by his feet and take off his shoes? Well, what's the symbolism in taking off the shoes? So the Bach, in his commentary on the Megillah, number 6, says as follows, Masha Amra, Shetigale Margalosav, why does Naomi tell Rus to uncover Boaz's feet? Hu derech tsar v'hachno'a lohoros, lo, shehinofeles lifnei raglov, So the Bach says something amazing. The Bach says that at the end of the day, the uncovering of the shoes, right? When do we take off our shoes? We take off our shoes by avelos, right? By mourning. Mourners don't wear shoes. I mean, okay, they don't wear leather shoes, but effectively, halachically, they don't wear shoes. So therefore, says the Bach, what Naomi was telling Ruth is take off his shoes so that he should understand that you are suffering. You are suffering. We are suffering. We're penniless. We're indigent. We have nothing. Rus, you're a convert who has come here. And remember again, Rus in the beginning of the story wasn't really so embraced by the general community. For two reasons. Number one, because she was a Moabite convert. But number two, also because the people didn't share the highest opinion of Naomi. Naomi fled in a time of need. Naomi and Elimelech had plenty of money, plenty of resources that could have somehow lessened the impact of the famine on the residents of Eretz Yisrael, but instead they chose to leave in an effort to preserve their wealth. So Rus, Naomi, are suffering. So Naomi tells Rus, go lay down, I say, take off his shoes. Taking off the shoes representing suffering. I don't know that Boaz understands the severity of our plight. So what I want you to do is symbolically show him how much we are suffering by removing his shoes. The Malbim in number 7 comes along and says something absolutely amazing. Absolutely amazing. And the truth is a dramatic idea. Take a look at number 7. 7 Aleph. Ubasa v'gilisa margalosa v'shachavt. Perish. Kie bosho militvo es boaz bepeh. Sheyisa oso. So remember, again, according to the Malbim, this whole thing is to encourage a shidduch, right? That's what this whole thing is. That Naomi really feels that Boaz should marry Rus. Remember, Boaz is recently widowed. So Rus is a wonderful young woman. Again, so Naomi really wants them to get together. The issue is Naomi and Rus were both too embarrassed to bring this up explicitly, and probably for very good reasons. You know, Boaz is nobility. Boaz was nobility, right? Again, some identify him as the Shofet Ivtzon. So remember, again, he was nobility. So to say that Boaz should marry this unknown Moabite convert, as wonderful as she might be, might have been perceived as a slight to Boaz. So Naomi is very reticent to bring this up explicitly. So therefore, again, she goes in and chooses to do this in a more nuanced fashion. She listened to this. So according to the Malbim, this whole idea of taking off the shoes was a veiled way to ask Boaz to marry Rus. Now, how does taking off shoes represent a veiled reference to getting remarried, to getting married to Rus? So this is incredible. Listen to this. The body is considered to be the shoe of the soul, right? Just like the shoe on the foot allows ultimately, again, the person to move, right? Without shoes, it's hard to walk around. So the shoe gives a person mobility. So too, the body is the shoe of the soul. The soul by itself in this world cannot do anything. So what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? He puts the soul into a body. And this way, again, the soul has the ability to interact in the world because it's housed in a body. Now watch this. He goes on. Even turn to the second page. Mibli guf, right? The soul can't do anything ultimately without the body. Good. So we'll see this. We'll talk about that later. So says the Malbim something amazing. What a shoe is to the foot, a body is to the soul. Right, so just like the shoe enables the foot to engage in dynamic activity, the body allows the soul to be able to engage in dynamic activity in this world as well. Now watch this, says the Baal in paragraph base. V'ha'ish ha'meis b'lo bani v'elan afsho margoa v'yodena mikashkeshes b'ishto asher lo asa ima pri v'yim cheshmo b'Yisrael. Listen to this. When a man dies without children, his soul can find no rest. His soul can find no rest in Olam Haba. So what does his soul do? The Lashon over here is incredible. His soul rattles around inside of his wife. The soul rattles around inside of his widow, inside of his wife. because it can't find any rest because the soul is so concerned that he's going to be forgotten from all of Klal Yisrael. Kishe yibim osa achiv biyitin zar liachiv. Hukiilu nefesh hames ba shenis li olam. Ki anola tu atzmo ha'ach hames v'yikare al shmo v'yokum tachtov l'nachalama l'nachalam. So listen to this. This is the whole essence of Yibum. Remember again, what's Yibum? A man dies without children. There is an obligation for the surviving brother to marry his sister-in-law, to marry the widow. Says the Malbim, what's happening in that mitzvah of Yibum? What's happening in this Yibum is as follows. When a man dies without children, his soul can't find rest. So which means the soul doesn't even ascend to Olam Haba, to Gan Eden, even if the soul can go. Instead, the soul rattles around inside of the widow, inside of his wife, hoping and yearning that she will get remarried to his brother, that the son who they then have in Meretz Hashem together will be called by the name of the deceased brother, and it's almost as if the soul of the deceased husband comes back into this world. The soul of the deceased husband only finds rest when his wife is able to marry his brother and ultimately again establish a family, establish a son in the deceased husband's memory. That is when the soul finally finds rest. He goes on, Ki oved ben Boaz, hayu ba'atzmo machlon ben ami. V'yesh v'az yesh l'nefesh ha'meis. So now watch this. So skip down a little bit. Paragraph Gimel. V'zeh ramza l'boaz b'mashe gilsa margalosov. So now watch this. We know that in the concept of Yibum, so where there is Yibum, the surviving brother marries his sister-in-law, marries the wife of the deceased brother. And when that occurs, that gives rest to the neshama of the deceased. But sometimes people choose not to do Yibum. And therefore, what happens? So there's a process called Chalitza. And in that process, again, involves the removal of the shoe, right? The sister-in-law removes the shoe of the brother-in-law who does not want to marry her, or she doesn't want to marry, and they perform the process of Chalitza. So look at paragraph Gimel. V'zeh ramza leboaz b'mashe gilsa margalosa v'tishkav. So this is absolutely incredible. This Malbim is wild. Rus is essentially giving Boaz an ultimatum. You need to decide what you're going to do. Remember, what does Rus do? She lies down by his feet and she takes off his shoes. So she says to him, you know, the time has come where you have to decide what kind of relationship you want to have with me. I could take off your shoes, we could do chalitza, you sever the tie, or I could come and lay down next to you, not now, but you know, metaphorically, come and lay down next to you as your wife when you marry me. Says the Malbim, and what Rus was telling Boaz is, understand that right now, my husband's soul churns inside of me because at the end of the day, he has found no rest. If you choose to take off your shoes and leave them off, then at the end of the day, my deceased husband's soul will never find rest. But if you allow me to lay in your company, if you take me as a wife, then you'll be happy, I'll be happy, and the neshama of my deceased husband will be happy as well. So therefore again, and that's what Naomi says, you know, when Naomi says to Rus, after she hatches the whole thing, she says, V'hu yagid l'cha is asher ta'asin. Boaz will tell you what to do. Now we understand it. Boaz will tell you if he wants to do chalitza, he doesn't want to be married to you, or he's ready to do yibum. Now, of course, you understand the yibum and chalitza that are being referred to over here are not literal. Because remember, again, yibum and chalitza on a biblical level only apply to brothers. To brothers. And of course, you know, Boaz is a relative, but he's not a brother. They were using some expanded form of what they call geula, of redemption, where the closest surviving relative would take some level of achrayis for the widow and for the estate. So therefore, according to the Malbim, what's happening over here is something dramatically amazing. Naomi tells Rus, you need to now find out what Boaz's intentions are with you. So lay down by his feet. And again, it's creating a very intimate moment in that moment, not a physically intimate moment, but an emotionally intimate moment with Rus laying down by the feet of Boaz, taking off his shoes and saying, Boaz, you have to decide what you want to do. Do you want me to come lay down next to you as a wife? Obviously not now, but once we get married, do you want me to come lay down next to you as a wife? Or should I take off your shoes and leave them off? Are you going to do chalitza? Not redeem me. But Boaz, please understand that if you choose not to redeem me, if you choose not to take me as a wife, then chances are I will not get remarried. And if I can't get remarried and establish a family, the soul of my deceased husband will forever rattle around in me. Because he is like, obviously, like, he is a soul without a body and can find no rest if his memory is somehow not memorialized. So this, according to the Malbim, is the dramatic episode that is occurring. The Al Sheikh number 8 has a little bit of a different... And by the way, the amazing part is Boaz understands, right? Boaz understands exactly what it is that's happening over here. Because remember, there was a very strong possibility that the way this could have played out is that Boaz would see this and he would yell at her. Right, get out! What are you doing over here? You're going to ruin both of our reputations. You have to leave. This is wrong. This is inappropriate. This is immoral. You can't have a woman sleeping by my feet in the middle of the night by the granary. But Boaz understands what it is that she's asking. He understands that she's saying to him, "You must decide. You must decide. Is it chalitza or is it yibum? Am I laying down by your feet and taking off your shoes, or am I laying down by your side as your wife?" That is the fundamental decision that Boaz had to make. The Al-Sheikh understands this a little bit differently. Number 8. The Al-Sheikh writes, this is incredible. Paragraph Aleph, 8 Aleph. Hine, al-klalos ha-inyan ray losum seichel v'havin. Hazos na'amishim ha-kalilas tas Hashem. So ultimately, again, if you skip down a little bit, in number 8, right after the question mark, it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines. 8 Aleph. So the Al-Sheikh is totally perplexed by this story. Totally perplexed. He doesn't understand how could it be that Naomi was telling Rus to do something that at first glance looks so immoral. Remember again, if you weren't learning Megillas Rus and somebody told you about this idea, you would bristle at it pretty significantly because it seems, it feels, and it looks pretty immoral. Even if you want to understand, like the Malbim said, that all of this ultimately, again, was to make Boaz make a decision. Do you want the Shidduch with me or not? It still seems to look what the Al-Sheikh writes. 8 Aleph, 5 lines in. 6 lines in. 5 lines. Hamibli ein shadchanim b'Yisrael. You hear that line? The Al-Sheikh says, there are no shadchanim. No one could read the Shidduch. There was no one to read the Shidduch. Naomi, this is what you have to do? You have to resort to such craziness to figure out if Boaz has an interest in Rus or not? There's not one Shadchan. You could promise them a very good Shadchanus. I guarantee you, Boaz would have paid a very good Shadchanus fee. So you're going to tell me then that there's no one else to read the Shidduch, that this is how you have to act? He goes on, Dabri Dabri al Boaz Lemor, Halora Isa Nara Azos Asher Haisim Nara Secha. Remember again, Boaz knows Rus very well. And remember again, Boaz has taken significant notice about Rus as well. He knows her. He knows her. And he understands who she is. And he admires her. He does. Because ultimately, again, he sees her tznius. So there's no one that can read the Shidduch. This is what you have to do. So he says something amazing. Take a look at paragraph Beis. Amnam. Ki merov chachma v'ruach alokim bekir ba'ases azos. V'hinei ra'asa na'ami ketzas ho'chacha be'inyanei boaz. V'asher dibra l'rus. Ki l'tzadekis v'tznua b'tachlis ha'isa be'inov. So Naomi sees that Boaz has taken an interest in Rus. He sees that. And he sees ultimately again that Boaz clearly sees some redeeming qualities in Rus. Ach Amra, mi yodea im belev Boaz, shezohi apreda tova, ha'asida lavo mimoav, ohi zulasa ve'in tova, kirak kisherihi. So this is incredible. The Al-Sheikh works with the understanding that the nation of Moab was destined to produce someone great for Klal Yisrael. Now, why would you say that? You know, interestingly enough, we are not permitted to start up with the nations of Ammon and Moab. Right? You're not supposed to start with the nations of Ammon and Moab. We understand, so somehow what the Al-Sheikh points out over here is that there was an understanding that from the neighboring nations, from Ammon and Moab, ultimately, again, someone great is going to come. So the question is, was Rus that person or not? Was Rus the person who came from the nations of the world ultimately again to judge? Because remember again, Ammon and Moab are our cousins. Because remember again, Lot is Avram's nephew, right? So ultimately again, we're related to the nations of Ammon and Moab. So what Naomi understood that Boaz took an interest in Rus, what she felt Boaz wasn't sure about was Rus destined for greatness or not? So what happens? Something amazing occurs. Take a look at paragraph Gimel. V'im na'ami ba'atzma hayasafek zebeliba. Al-ma'al-kin ma'asta. Amra Baliba, Im Adabra al Bazi Kachanolo or Ashlach Law Mishatrin, for Masupak Beinyana Lo Yishma Vlo Yove. Okay, let me just read a few lines and then I'll explain. Alkin Yatsua Kliosel Lomar Law, Lasos Hamay Sahaze. So this is absolutely incredible. This is gonna blow your mind. What Naomi essentially tells Ruth to do is to recreate what her great-great-great-great-grandmother did. Because remember again, her great-great-great-great-grandmother was the daughter of Lot. And what did the daughter of Lot do? See, remember, the daughters of Lot the daughters of Lot thought that the world had come to an end. They thought the world had come to an end. So they hatched this plan to get their father drunk, to become pregnant by him. This was their plan. Okay, granted, not the best of plans, but at the end of the day, their intention was pure. I know it sounds strange because it's an act of incest. So how could an act of incest be pure? Well, again, they literally thought that they were the last human beings on the planet. And they thought it was their sacred obligation. The reason they were saved, ultimately, again, is to recreate the world, to rebuild the world. So this is absolutely something amazing. The daughters of Lot, what they did was absolutely and unequivocally l'shem shamayim. They had purity of intent. Again, they were significantly mistaken and made some significant missteps. But at the end of the day, there was complete purity of intent. Complete purity of intent. So what does Naomi do to Ruth? This is incredible. She says to Ruth, I want you to do the same thing that your great-great-great-grandmother did. I want you to sneak into the granary, hide out, and under the cover of darkness, I want you to go ahead and lay down by his feet, take off his shoes. Boaz is a smart man, and he's going to realize that essentially you're doing the same thing as your alter Baba. And he's going to realize that just as your great-grandmother, what she did was lishma, what she did was a purity of intent, Boaz will realize the purity of your actions as well. And when he sees the purity of your actions, by the way, it's not just purity of actions, but when he sees your strength, right? When he sees ultimately, again, your commitment to rebuilding your world, to giving your husband's neshama rest, he will see the beauty and purity of your intent and says, Naomi, I'm pretty sure he's going to marry you. I'm pretty sure he's going to marry you. So according to the Al-Sheikh, what's dramatically amazing over here is that Ruth is essentially telling Naomi to do the same thing that her great-great-great-grandmother did, who was the daughter of Lot, who bore a son to Lot, who was named Moav. Borrow a playbook, right? Borrow from the playbook of your grandmother and do it here also. Obviously, not fully, not in the same way. But again, Boaz will see the incredible symmetry between your actions and the actions of your ancestors. And he will realize that just as your ancestors were motivated by purity of intent, so too, again, he will recognize the purity of your actions as well. An incredible, incredible insight. Go to paragraph Dalid. And remember again, even if you look at the textual symmetry, remember again, the daughters of Lot, what do? They give their father wine. What does the pasuk say about Boaz? Boaz ate, Boaz drank. Now obviously Boaz wasn't drunk. Lot was drunk. Boaz wasn't drunk, but there's an incredible symmetry just in the events, the way it unfolds. So look at paragraph Dalid. Uma gam Boaz bir oso hamaisem mamish ke ov de ima bapoel. When Boaz sees this, he literally says, I see this is exactly the way that your great-great-grandmother acted. Nichnas hadavar belibo, velo nach, velo shakat, adim kila hadavar biyom ahuki nefarish beksuvim, hine ki mechachma astana ami hadavar, vashem gamar al yada. So this is really incredible. So this was Naomi's plan. Naomi's plan was, do what your grandmother did, Boaz will realize the purity of your intent and he will marry you. And sure enough, Naomi's approach works. So we see three dramatic different understandings into why Ruth is sneaking in, laying down by Boaz's feet, uncovering his feet, taking off his shoes, and ultimately, again, telling Boaz, tell me what to do. According to the Bach, taking off the shoes ultimately represents pain, suffering, difficulty. Boaz, you need to understand, you need to have empathy for what it is that we're going through. The Malbim, Ruth saying to Boaz, my husband's soul has found no rest. It is now time for you to decide, am I sleeping at your feet, taking off your shoes, or am I sleeping by your side as a wife? According to the Al-Sheikh, Naomi felt awkward. you know, going with a straightforward shidduch. So instead tells Ruth to take this dynamic activity, the same thing that your great-grandmother did. Boaz will see the purity of intent, the purity of your actions. He will be moved by it and he will marry you. And sure enough, again, it worked. But there's one more piece of this story that's strange. Very strange. You see, so remember, the strangest part is what Ruth does. But there's something else that's strange, which is, why is Boaz sleeping in his granary? Boaz is very wealthy. Boaz owns many fields. Yet, Boaz was sleeping in his granary. Now, by the way, lest you say that maybe just that night he slept in his granary, that can't be. Why can't that be? Because remember, when Naomi gives instructions to Rus, she says, Rus, he sleeps in the granary. He sleeps in, which means everyone knew that Boaz slept in the granary. So why would a wealthy individual, a prosperous individual, respected individual like Boaz, ultimately go ahead and sleep in the granary? What's the pshat? So look at this. So the Medrash writes in number 9. So according to the Medrash, it appears that Boaz used to thresh the grain at night. Now the reason for that apparently is at night, the winds blow a little bit softer. So remember again, for threshing and for winnowing, remember, how do you winnow? You stick a pitchfork into the grain, throw it up in the air, and the wind blows away the chaff and the kernels fall back down. But that only works with a soft wind. So apparently, again, during the day, the wind is stronger. At night, the wind is softer. So Boaz used to go ahead and really work through the night, it sounds like. But at the end, and therefore, again, because he was working through the night, he ended up sleeping in the granary. The Medrash in number 12 says, 10 says the same thing, essentially. Number 11, Rashi says, Halayla, Shahaya Hador Parutz Bigneva Vigezel, Vahaya Yashin Bigrono Lishmar Garono. But so listen to this, Bigarno. So according to Rashi, there was rampant theft. There was rampant theft in Beis Lechem Yehuda during this time. So Boaz used to sleep in the granary to safeguard his wheat. Amazing. So he would sleep to watch over his wheat. But again, that's still strange. Why? Boaz could have hired someone for that, right? He doesn't have to do that himself. He could have hired someone to do that, yet he doesn't. Which leads us then to something else. Look at number 13. The Gemara Maseches Baba Basra writes as follows. The Gemara says, Amrav Arav Huna Amrav, Mea ve'eshim mishtos asa Boaz lebanov. Boaz made 120 mishtos, 120 parties for his son. Shneemar, vahilo shloshim banim u'shloshim banos shalach achutza u'shloshim banos hevi lebanav minachutz vayishpot esro sheva shanim. U'b'chol achos v'achos asa shtei mishtos, echad babai bebeis aviv ve'echa bebeis chamov v'kulon mesu b'chayov. So the Gemara here quotes or paints an incredible and overwhelming picture. Boaz had children. Now, whether 120 sounds a bit hyperbolic, but the idea is he had a very large family. Whatever happened, Boaz lost all of his children. He lost all of his children, and he lost his wife. So Boaz is a man. Now, again, the Gemara doesn't give us the circumstances of that, but all we know is that Boaz had endured tragic and traumatic loss. He was alone in this world. So if you take a look at number 14, this is from Rav Yaakov Meidan. He wrote an incredible, a small little pamphlet on Megillas Rus called Tikva Mima'amakim. And he says something absolutely amazing. He says, skip to the second paragraph. Efshar shechazal tamo ala ish hanechpa da holich lishon balayla levado b'stei b'kzeh ha'arema. Right, so in number 14, the second paragraph, so Chazal are bothered by this idea. How is it that Boaz is sleeping in the granary? Doesn't make any sense. Why is he sleeping in the granary? B'makom lusho v'veso. Why doesn't he sleep in his house? Rav Meidan makes an amazing observation. Midvareh shal na'ami lirus nira, shezu haiso darko b'meshek ha'miram. And remember again, as we said before, the fact that Naomi knew where Boaz slept indicates to us that it wasn't just that he decided to, you know, camp out that night, right? That he decided to rough it that night, or it was beautiful. He always slept there. Why did he always sleep there? Listen to this. Efshar shechazal hisiku mikach shahaya chaser bias. This is so incredibly profound. Boaz was a man without a home. He was a man without a home. Lefachos b'muvan shel mishpacha, isha v'yiladim. You know, sometimes when you ask people who deal with loss, what is the most difficult and overwhelming piece of loss? It's going home to an empty house. You know, when you're out, when you're working, when you're here, when you're there. So you always think about your loss, but it can be pushed back a little bit because I'm busy with other things. But when you go home and you close the door and there's a deafening silence, there is a tidal wave of pain that comes and washes over you. Posits Rav Meidan something absolutely amazing. That perhaps Boaz could not bear to sleep in his house. Why? Because Boaz said, I don't have a house. I lost my wife. I lost my children. I don't have a home. I don't have a home. So where do I sleep? I sleep in the granary. Because I can't go into that house. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. I could even find someone else to watch over the grain. I can't go into that house. That is just simply too painful, too overwhelming for me. Now go back to the first line. Go back to the first paragraph. It's easy. Still in number 14. Go back to the first line. Ad shebas Rus. Until Rus came along, Haya Boaz shari b'tahoma yeyush. Boaz was lost in the abyss of yeyush, right? Of hopelessness. Below Yecholis, the holy banim ulaham shechazaro. Because remember again, Boaz was an older man. Boaz was much older than Rus. So Boaz felt, I lost my wife, I lost my children. Ultimately, again, I'm not going to leave behind any kind of legacy. Rus heficha Boaz hatikva kederach she'asta Tamar li Yehuda. So Rus ultimately, again, breathes hope into Boaz. And now something amazing occurs. So Rav Meidan posits that what's happening over here is as follows. That Boaz is sleeping in the granary at night, not because he's working at night. All the other things we said, Boaz can't go into the house. I can't go into the house. It's just too painful. There's too many memories. I see my wife's face. I see my children's face. It's just too painful for me. So instead, I choose to sleep out by the granary. I choose to go ahead and just be alone by myself. But at least it's not in the pain of the four walls of my home. So something amazing happens. Rus comes along, and she takes off his shoes. So Rav Meidan says, when Rus does this, she breathes new life into Boaz. She breathes new life into Boaz. But the question is, how exactly does Rus breathe new life into Boaz? So of course, you could say on the most basic level, Boaz understands that Rus is coming and telling him essentially, I'm ready to marry you if you're ready to marry me. That could give Boaz incredible hope. But if you remember again, the Malbim, when he was speaking about the shoes, quoted the pasuk by Moshe Rabbeinu, of Shal Na'alecha Me'al Raglecha. Take your shoes off your feet. Take your shoes off your feet. Go to number 15 for just a moment. So what's this pasuk? So just to give you context, Vayom Vayar Hashem Kisar Liros Vayikra Elav Elokim Mitoch Hasneh Vayomer Moshe Vayomer Inenich. Remember again, Moshe Rabbeinu is minding his own business. He's a shepherd in Minyan, happily married. He's got the life. He's got a good father-in-law. Everything is good. He's tending his sheep one day and he sees the burning bush. He turns aside to see what exactly it is that is happening. And he hears a Kadosh Baruch Hu called, Moshe, I'm here. Vayomer, Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Al tikrav halom, do not come any closer. Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. Take your shoes off your feet. Ki amokom asher ata omeid alav admas kodeshu. Because ultimately, again, the place that you are standing is holy place. So what does this mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells? And remember, so the Malbim quotes that pasuk, Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. So what's happening over here? So remember again, now we understand Boaz is sleeping inside of the granary because he can't bear to go inside the house. Because being inside the house is too painful. Because being inside the house amplifies his feelings of hopelessness and helplessness. My life is done. I lost my wife. I lost my children. I lost everything. So I prefer to sleep in the granary. Rus comes, she lays down by his feet, takes off his shoes, and suddenly again she breathes new life into him. What's the pshat? How does she breathe new life into him? So I want to share with you something absolutely amazing. In number 16, this is a quote from the Rebbe, Rabbi Moshe of Kobrin. And he says something absolutely amazing. He says, let me tell you this outside. He says, Shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. Na'al is a shoe. But na'al could also mean something else. Na'al could also mean shackles. A shackle or a lock. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe Rabbeinu was something absolutely amazing. Moshe, if you want to be great in life, if you want to approach me, if you want the relationship, if you want to seize your destiny, if you want to become the best version of yourself, shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. Remove the shackles which are holding you back. Remove the things which are holding you down. Because at the end of the day, unless you're willing to unshackle yourself, you will never be able to move forward in life. You see, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe Rabbeinu was something absolutely amazing. Moshe, you have a lot of baggage. A lot of baggage, and understandably so, right? Remember again, Moshe's raised in the house of Pharaoh, right? Given up by his parents because they cannot raise him as their own. But yet he knows his identity. He tries to intervene to help a Jew, and the Jews turn on him. Moshe Rabbeinu has a very complicated life. Very complicated life. And as such, he has incredible baggage. Remember, he's in Midian and in the desert to just disappear into the obscurity of the desert. Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, in general in life, if you want to be successful, check your baggage. Get rid of your baggage. Get rid of your baggage. Because if you don't get rid of the shackles, if you don't get rid of the things which are holding you back, you will never be able to move forward. You know, I've mentioned this concept before, and the mashal I always like to give is as follows. You know, if you ever travel, especially if you travel with family. So, you know, especially, you know, you're going somewhere far away, so everybody has to pack up. So if you're like me, or maybe not like me, you're probably all better than me. So I find it incredibly exasperating to travel with a lot of baggage, right? The suitcase falls over, this one, this, and then it gets the worst, you know, when you get onto the plane and then there's no overhead baggage space and you have to figure out where to put everything and you're schwitzing and you're this and you're that. And then what happens? You usually see that guy who is traveling in business class, right? And he's able to fit all of his possessions into a Ziploc bag. Right? And he has a Ziploc bag, he sits down, he gets his drink, his legs are crossed, he's fine, he's happy. You're schwitzing, you're making enemies in the next aisle, you're rearranging people's packages and people's suitcases, you're getting angry at your kids, you're getting angry at your spouse, you're getting angry at the Ribbono Shel Olam, at the whole world, because I can't believe everybody has so much stuff. We don't even own this much stuff. Did you pack other people's stuff into our suitcases? What happened over here exactly? And then again, the guy comes back, he's up to his second glass of wine already, fantastic, he's relaxing, he's sleeping, he's watching movies, he's eating dinner, and you're still playing around with overhead compartments. It is such an incredible metaphor for life. Travel as light as possible. You'll be happier, and you'll get to where you want to go sooner. We schlep around so much baggage all the time. We schlep around baggage from past failures. We schlep around baggage from our families, from our parents, from our grandparents, from our marriage. We have all kinds of baggage that we carry. So you have a choice. There's always a choice in life. The choice is you could carry it. And most people, in fact, do end up carrying all of their baggage throughout life. Can you get to your intended destination? Absolutely, you can get there. It just takes 10 times as long. Or, shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. Let go of your baggage. Identify the things that are holding you back and unshackle yourself from it. Let it go. Let it go. And when you unshackle yourself from the things that are holding you back, there is no telling where you could travel to, no telling what finish lines you could cross, no telling what you can accomplish. That's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Moshe Rabbeinu. You have baggage and you're going to get more baggage. But I'm going to give you perhaps what is the most important piece of advice to your life. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe, shal na'alecha me'al raglecha. Remove the shackles from your feet. Remove the locks. Remove the baggage from your shoulders. Ki amakom asher ata omi delav amas kodesh. Because you're so close. You're so close to holiness. You're so close to me. But if you have a lot of baggage, it's going to take you so much longer. But if you unshackle yourself and move yourself forward, then you will be okay. You'll be able to travel faster, able to travel better, and able to reach your intended destination. Now let's go back. Now we understand what Ruth was really telling Boaz. She was telling Boaz, Boaz, you have a choice. I know your heart is broken. You know, I often think, if you imagine, in that granary that night, were probably two of the biggest broken hearts in the entire world. Boaz had lost his wife. He had lost his children. Rus lost her husband and had absolutely no prospects for her future. She gave up her family in Moab and had come to a strange land where, to be very honest, she was not fully embraced. It's hard for converts to integrate. And it's hard sometimes for converts to feel accepted. You know, very often a person converts, and when they first convert, it's a lot of parties and a lot of excitement, but then people often forget about them, and they kind of disappear into the shadows. Rus, that granary that night, were two of the most broken-hearted people in the world. And so what does Rus do? Rus takes off Boaz's shoe. So the Malbim says, yes, it's a veiled reference to Yibo. Marry me or do chalitza. But perhaps it's something even more profound. She's telling Boaz, Shal na'alecha me'araglecha. Boaz, I know your heart is shattered into a million pieces. And I see because you're sleeping in your granary. And you have a beautiful home right here. My heart is also shattered in a million pieces. But Boaz, I'm ready to let go of the pain and move forward. Are you ready? Are you ready to take off your shoes? Are you ready to take off the shackles? Are you ready to get rid of the baggage and move forward with me in life together? That was what was unfolding in that fateful night in Boaz's granary. Two broken-hearted people who were really united by tragedy. They both understood the loss of a loved one. They both understood the loss of family. They both understood the loss of dreams and aspirations. Two of the most lonely people in the world, in the granary that night. And Rus, many, many, many years Boaz's junior, says to him, we have to make a choice. I'm ready to move forward. I'm ready to get rid of the baggage of failed dreams and dashed hopes and aspirations. Will you come with me? Will you join me on the journey? Are you ready to take off the locks? Are you ready to take off the shackles? Are you ready to take off the shoes? Are you ready to get rid of the baggage? That's what was happening that night in the granary. And when Boaz sees this, what does he do? He calls Rus a tzadeges. Thank you. Thank you for what you've done for me. Thank you for giving me the ability for the first time in a long time to feel hope, to feel optimism, to see light at the end of the tunnel. Thank you for allowing me to see that my life doesn't have to be one long shiva, but in fact, despite of my advanced age, I have the ability to become happy once again. Thank you so much, Rus. Tzadka mimenu. You are so much more righteous and so much wiser than I am. Thank you for allowing me to come out of my stupor of sadness. Thank you for allowing me to emerge from this fog of despair and be able to see that I can truly build a life. Rus takes off Boaz's shoes. And in that moment, she says, yes. You know, and the amazing part is, Rus says, you know, Boaz, your soul is in turbulence, right? It's turbulent. My deceased husband's soul is turbulent. I have baggage. You have baggage. Let's take off our shoes. Let's take off the locks. Let's take off the shackles. Let's get rid of the baggage and let's move forward together. That's what occurs that fateful night in the granary. And now to kind of loop it all the way back, now you understand when the Medrash says, like we saw before, Matsasi David Avdi. Matsasi David Avdi. I found David. Where did I find David, says the Medrash? Hecha Matsasi Oso Bistom. What does that mean? That if you want to really understand who David HaMelech was, you have to understand who Rus was. Because David HaMelech represented the finest qualities of his great-grandmother. And Rus had many incredible qualities. But perhaps her most dominant quality, her most incredible and strong quality, was her ability to go ahead and let go of the baggage of the past in order to lighten the load so that I could go forward and build something beautiful. Rus also walked around with a broken heart, but she said, I have a choice. I could walk around with a broken heart. I could walk around as the victim. I could walk around again in this fog of despair. I could say, you know what? I'm checking the baggage. I'm getting rid of the shackles. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm going to start new, start fresh, and rebuild. Is that not what David HaMelech did over and over and over? David HaMelech suffered so much misfortune, so many setbacks, so many difficulties. And yet, the greatness of David HaMelech was in his ability to constantly rebound. It didn't matter what it was. Whatever happened, David HaMelech was always able to rebound, always able to come back, always able to start again. Whether it was the difficulties he had with his family, whether it was the difficulties he had with Shaul, whether the first marriage that he had, which was a failed marriage, not because of him, not even because of his wife, but because of his father, because of Shaul, whether it was the fact that ultimately, again, his monarchy was initially accepted, the rebellion of Avshal in the episode with Bathsheba, all of the different things that plagued David HaMelech throughout his life. Yet, he refused to yield. He refused to give in. He refused to cave. He refused. Where does a person get that strength from? Matsasi David Avdi. And where did I find David? I found him in Sdom. Because who comes from Sdom? Moab. And who comes from Moab? Rus. And who comes from Rus? David. You want to know David? You have to know Rus. You want to know the greatest qualities of David? You have to know Rus. Because Rus is the woman who personified this Shal Na'alecha Me'al Raglecha. Rus personified the ability to take off your shoes, to remove your shackles, to remove the baggage, and move forward in life. This was David HaMelech. This is the story of the Megillah. And remember again, do you know what happens when you remove your baggage, when you remove the shackles, and you take off your shoes? That's where the Messianic line comes from. Redemption, Mashiach, redemption, comes from those who are able to take off their shoes. Because if you can't take off your shoes, you'll never experience any kind of redemption. If you can't take off your shoes, it's difficult to move forward in life. If you can't check your baggage, it'll simply weigh you down and you'll struggle with it so much that at a certain point in time, you just give up and you buckle underneath the load. And what an incredibly important lesson for us. Because the truth is, as we mentioned before, everybody has baggage. Everybody has baggage. The only variable is, you know, are you the Ziploc person? Or are you the full carry-on person? Or are you the individual who has to pay for extra suitcases? Hey, those are the variables in life. But one thing is clear. Identify what your baggage is. Identify the things that are holding you back in life. What are your shackles? What are your shackles? And make a decision. Are you willing to remain shackled? Or are you ready and courageous enough to let go? Because sometimes we're not ready to let go for whatever the reason, but just understand that failure to let go of your baggage, failure to unshackle yourself, prevents you from moving forward in life. It's a decision that each of us has to make. Identify your baggage, figure out if you have the courage to let go of it. And if you have the courage to let go of it and to unshackle yourself, there is no telling what you could accomplish, what you could do, and what you could become. Mashiach comes from people who are willing to take off their shoes. Personal redemption for each of us comes the moment we're willing to take off our shoes, let go of our baggage, let go of the things that are holding us back. Only when we're able to do that, are we able to engage in the journey of life? Are we able to move forward? And are we able to experience our personal redemption as well? Stop over here for today. Yesh koach to everyone for joining us. And Amir HaShem, next week we will continue with insight into Tehillim and Megillas Rus as well. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Of course.
Thank you.
Of course.